The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme, and we've been joined in studio now. Some of our guests have left. We've been joined in studio by Niamh Horrigan, Senior Lecturer in Sociology in UCC, and Dennis Staunton, Deputy Editor of the Irish Times, is still with us. And in our Limerick studio, or are they in studio or are they on the phone? I think they're in studio. We've Alan English, who's editor of the Limerick Leader, Father Tony O'Riordan, who's parish priest of Corpus Christi in Moyross, and Tommy Daly, who's chair of the Moyross Residents Alliance. And we're going to have another look at the story of those particular areas in Limerick. And thank you all very, very much indeed for coming in and talking to us. Tommy, as a resident, what's your own reaction to what happened this week and obviously, of course, all that went before it?
Well, my own reaction is, look, if people commit crime, they have to pay for crime, and I think justice was done, you know.
And you're satisfied that that's sorted now?
Well, hopefully. I don't know too much into it, but hopefully, you know, that the families involved, you know, that they're happy with the outcome, you know, that they see a bit of justice done, you know.
How many kids have you got yourself, Tommy?
I have seven kids.
And did you, I mean, they range in age from 9 to 33, so you've got quite a range there. I mean, were you concerned about your own kids that they would get involved in either this, or indeed that they could get shot at?
Well, that's every parent's worry. Yeah, of course you have that. You have that worry. I mean, we were in the middle of it at one time, you know, in Delmage Park. Shootings were rampant, and you know. But I tried.
Your son James ran out onto the green at one stage during a shootout.
Oh, that's right. He carried 2 4-year-olds, one under each arm, and ran into the house. You know, and it was very. You know, at the time It was very hard on my neighbours, because my neighbours actually physically got their belongings into the car next door and just ran, you know, left their house fully furnished. They were frightened.
And you know Sheila Murray now. People will remember Millie and Gavin as the two little children. Mm. Their car was petrol bombed. I mean, what kind of a life did they have after that?
Well, I know Sheila personally, and Gavin and Millie just come into the house before that unfortunate incident, and lovely people, you know, Sheila, lovely people, the kids are lovely, and I see them after as well, and we give her comfort, she's come into the house, but her life is ruined for the rest of her life, it's ruined, you know, because the children are maimed for life, you know.
And I gather are having operation after operation.
That's correct.
When you say your neighbours just upped and left all the furniture.
Yeah.
And they went away. What happened to the house then?
Well, you had certain individuals shooting at each other, you know, the gangs, you know, at the time it was rampant. It was no secret in Moyross. It got out of hand. All the houses in Delmage Park, you know, both in front of me in our square, every one of them was riddled with bullets, you know, including my own house.
So when you have an empty house beside you, does it stay empty for long?
Yeah, well, it was 4 years. It was 4 years empty, and the unfortunate thing about it was that it can attract antisocial behaviour as well.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but we tried to keep our eye on it, and there was a few times people tried to get entry to it, and we got it stopped, and you know.
How?
We had to get onto them. We had to get onto the guards, and you know, the Limerick City Council, Michael Hatton at the time, and Regeneration to board it up again, you know, try and make it safe.
So that house was boarded up beside you, because I did hear about other houses that were burnt out and then large walls constructed for those who wished to want to stay behind and watch television in peace.
Yeah, well, you had a lot of that, you know, you had a lot of that people, you know, putting fences up. I mean, I myself, two of my neighbours had to make steel shutters for the front of their homes, you know, to stop bullets coming in on top of them, you know. Well, three houses in our square anyway, and it was very dark days, for us. It's a thing like that brings back very bad memories to me. And I would not like to anyone to go through what the people in Moira went through. Mm. I know the regeneration areas, but not only in Moira.
Of course, yeah, I know that. Yeah, and I mean, everybody doesn't want to get their own area just fingered, so to speak. Can I go to you, Alan English, Limerick leader? Did the rest of us kind of sleepwalk through this? I mean, listening to that man talking about people leaving their homes, leaving their furniture behind and just running.
I think to a certain extent, there's no question though that the incident, the Gavin and Millie incident, was a huge thing that captured the imagination and appalled the people of Ireland. It also led to John Fitzgerald's report, and then it also led on to a huge level of promising. There was thousands of houses were supposed to be demolished. People were going to get a house for a house. So in and around 2007, as the Fianna Fáil government was about to be re-elected, massive promises were made. Something like 4 billion euro was supposed to have been spent, just over half of that by the state, and almost 2 billion of private money. An absolute tiny amount of money from that 4 billion ever materialised. So there was huge promises made which weren't kept, and a huge sense of disillusionment grew up amongst the people in regeneration estates. But the good thing that came out of it really was the 100 Gardaí, as recommended by John Fitzgerald in his report, were put on the streets, and they went about their work, and the fruition of that came this week with the conviction of Wayne Dundon.
Tell me about Wayne Dundon. He came in to visit you.
He came in to visit me, yes, in 2010.
Tell us a little bit about that and why he did.
Well, I got a call to say that Wayne Dundon was in the front office, which I initially, regarded as some sort of prank. And then I put the phone down, and then I picked it up again and said, "Are you actually serious?" So I went down, and there he was. He was quite angry. It wasn't about anything to do with, you know, what we'd reported about him. The edition of the paper that he was holding in his hand rather angrily did feature him on the front page. He had made a complaint to the Gardaí about Steve Collins ludicrously intimidating him, for which Steve Collins had been brought into the Garda station and questioned. So there was outrage in the city over this, but that wasn't the thing that was upsetting him. There was also pictures from his daughter's first communion, which had taken place over the weekend in the city, and you know, we had questioned why such an elaborate and extravagant celebration of this little girl's communion could have been afforded by allegedly unemployed man. So that was what inflamed his anger. He came in very, very unhappy. I kind of calmed him down and sat him down. I wasn't sure what to do with him. I didn't want to take him into the bowels of the building. I didn't really know what to do with him. So I just sat him down and he calmed down. And to be fair, he behaved himself. At one stage, he even apologised for using bad language. And after 5 minutes, my instinct was to start writing down what he was saying. And I basically interviewed him for about the next 50 minutes, during which I got a real insight into the way the man's mind worked. He saw himself as a huge victim. He had unbelievable hatred for Steve Collins. He blamed him he just got out of jail. He was just out of jail after 5.5 years for threatening to kill a member of the Collins family. He wanted me to come up to his house in Weston to review a video footage which he claimed showed that he had been framed. He talked about Limerick. He had no love at all for Limerick. He spewed a lot of venom about how the city was a depressing place, how people were committing suicide left, right and centre. I asked him about the drugs that were at that time rampant in the city, for which his gang was the predominant distributor. He denied any knowledge of it.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, an unbelievable display of self-justification.
And he thought he was a victim?
He thought he was a victim because he was saying that Steve Collins only had to pick up the phone and said and say that he'd been threatened by Wayne Dundon, and Wayne Dundon was going to get another 10 years in jail, you know. So he basically said he was afraid to leave his house on account of the power that Steve Collins had to report him.
Unbelievable. Mm. So, you must have been gobsmacked, if you don't mind my putting it so casually. Or
yeah, I was. You know, I also asked him about why, a junior member of the McCarthy Dundon gang would take it upon himself to go into the Coincastle amusement arcade and shoot in cold blood Roy Collins. He said he had no knowledge of that. So, I mean, he was just brazenly denying everything.
But wasn't it he himself who had his sister where the whole thing stupidly started on the were trivial enough? Now, I don't start ringing in to me to tell me that children shouldn't be in pubs, I know that. But it was the new legislation that kids couldn't be in a, under 18s couldn't be in a pub after 9 o'clock. And was it not he who came in with his sister?
Yeah, his sister was refused, 14-year-old girl Annabel Dundon.
By Ryan.
By Ryan Lee, correct.
Yeah.
He then arrived and put his index finger to his temple and said, "You're effing dead." That was what he was convicted. So he was convicted of threatening to kill 30 minutes after he emerged from his car and did this provocative gesture. Somebody arrived, an unknown gunman, still unknown, in a motorbike helmet, walked in and shot Ryan Lee twice with a shot-off shotgun.
Yeah. And did he think he was a victim there?
He did, yeah. He said that he wanted, as I said to you, he wanted me to come up and look at this video evidence, which he said he brought to court and he was still convicted. He said there were 13 seconds from the time when he got out of his car, went over, collected his sister, got back inside the car and said it was impossible that this sort of, this threatening and shouting could have taken place, you know. But anyway.
Unbelievable. Mm. Anything else he told you?
Yeah, he had a lot of things to say. He had a lot of things to say. He talked about, he was proud of the fact that he was educated. He said he'd been to school until he was 16, that he could read and write. And he had a lot to say about social justice. He talked about it was a year exactly to the day since 5,000 people took to the streets of Limerick to protest against the gangland violence and to stand full square behind the extraordinarily brave Steve Collins and his family who led that rally. He resented this, and he asked me, he said, you know, why are the people of Limerick being behind Steve Collins? Why aren't the people of Limerick rising up against the bankers? You know, I'm not the guy who put hundreds of thousands of people out of their jobs, you know, so why are they rising up against why aren't they rising up against these bankers? You know, he had plenty of opinions, put it that way.
And you were taking notes all the time. He didn't at any stage say, put down that pen.
No. I mean, I was initially somewhat circumspect about whether it was a good idea to take these notes, but I suppose the journalist in me took over and,
It would, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it, Dennis?
I think it probably would, yeah. Well done.
And the more I wrote, the more he seemed to want to talk, and after 20 minutes his wife, who has been waiting outside, came in and asked him to take her home, and he said take a taxi. He talked up for about another 30 minutes.
And do you think, Alan, this is Dennis Staunton here, do you think that he became so delusional because at this stage he had been so much surrounded by people who were afraid of him or who were beholden to him that he never heard anything negative about himself except from outsiders or in the media or whatever?
Partly a little bit of that, Dennis, but this guy was a law unto himself, you know. I mean, he brought a level of viciousness and brutality to Ireland, not just Limerick, that outstripped anything that had gone before. Where that persona came from, I've no idea. But you know, he had no compunction about doing anything.
He'd beaten up his own mother, hadn't he?
Yes, I think that was reported. He was also convicted in London as a younger man for throwing an elderly woman down the stairs. There was nothing that he wouldn't do, and there was a terrible aura of sense of fear around the city over these people. I mean, when we would, as a newspaper, try and talk to people on the streets about, you know, vox pops, you know, what do you think of the latest thing? You know, there was almost nobody who wanted to put their name on an article or who would be photographed. Just there was a sense of fear of having anything to do with these people that might be picked up.
Right. Father Tony Reardon, it's difficult enough for somebody in your position, isn't it? You have to, as it were, serve all the people.
I do, but I find the vast majority of the people in Mayross are all wanting to work to transform the place, and what most people want is just a normal life. And thankfully, some of the incidents we've just been talking about are a chapter has closed on that. And I suppose we're at a point where we can with help progress into a different type of future.
Yeah.
Or we can go backwards.
Yeah. No, I absolutely accept that. And I think whether you go to Beirut or you go to Northern Ireland, or no matter where you go to, in in troubled spots, you will generally speaking find it. And I presume that you would agree with me on this. And if you don't, please say so, Niamh. The vast majority of people, even in the roughest township, are actually, broadly speaking, decent people that just want to get on with their lives.
That was really the extraordinary finding when I did the big 3-year piece of research, which was in looked at Mayross and South Hill and Ballinacore Weston and St Mary's Park. And I was actually extraordinarily struck by how many really good people you encountered. Yeah. More, in fact, I think, than you would in your kind of everyday life, because in a sense, I think the circumstances were more challenging. So people were forced to make choices, and often difficult choices. And I was really struck by often the courage and the goodness of people. You heard Tommy talking earlier about his son going out and saving the two kids. And, you know, I encountered so many incidents of that I often came away thinking, God, would I have done that in that situation? You know, would I have gone in and comforted that particular family maybe when they had lost somebody? Or would I have, you know, people would make dinners for each other. They would support each other in so many ways. And there was such a strong sense of community, even in the darkest episodes that Tony and Tommy have referred to there, such a strong sense of community that often you wouldn't see in more, you know, middle class, affluent areas. That was the basis, I think, in some ways of a lot of the positive things that have happened since then. And if we look at the convictions that happened this week, if we look at a lot of what's been achieved in terms of policing alone, a lot of that actually was rooted in community policing and the contacts that were made between the Gardaí in the particular and the community. And it was the courage of people in those communities to work with the Gardaí and to contact them.
Which must have been, because, I mean, we just heard Alan saying there, and indeed we heard Peter Power saying earlier on, that people just didn't want to talk because they didn't want to be seen to talk.
Well, certainly, even when I was starting my research, there was a view going around, and it was some that was being, you know, popularised by the gangs themselves, that communications with the Gardaí were being monitored, so that therefore if you contacted the Gardaí, that they would know about it and that there would be repercussions for that. And it really wasn't until 2010 that the Gardaí themselves introduced this very secure system by which the contacts, they're protected. So up to that point, people were always concerned, well, if I ring the guards, people may know and it may come back
Marianne,
on me.
Yes?
Could I come in there? Just, I mean, we it's right, I suppose, to focus on the ferociousness of
is that
like,
Tony?
It is, yeah.
It
may be correct to focus on the ferocity of someone like Wayne Dundon, or it might be good to focus on the strengths and characters of the people of Mayross. But it's really, really important to bring into focus and into this conversation the other players, the decision makers and the government departments here,
right,
and their role or their abdication of their role. Following the Fitzgerald report, you know, there was an all-government response promised to tackle the criminality, the physical issues and the social and economic issues. And I don't think the people have seen an all-government response. There was a promise of an interdepartmental group to lead in a coordinated way and to support people like ourselves on the ground to deliver a range of measures to address for the next generation interventions that will move particularly young people but also their parents into a better way of living. And the government, I think, have walked away from that aspect of it. And what we're left with really is a social housing project that has seen so many houses demolished and now envisages a small number of houses being developed. And the Department of Environment, which I wouldn't see has any history of knowledge in social engineering, are not really getting involved. And I think that that's a very important part of this discussion. It would be wrong to just focus on the people of Mayrhos or the gangsters in the story.
Well, they're a very important part of the story, actually.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you know Wayne Dundon?
No, I didn't, no.
No.
I think, Marion, in fairness, a big concern that I would have to pick up on what Tony was saying, there's been a lot of talk this week, almost celebratory talk about how much things have calmed down, which they have tremendously. But I would have a real concern about complacency there, because there's two factors which have contributed to that quietening down, aside from the courage of people working with the community. And the first is the fact that during a period of austerity, the demand for, particularly for cocaine, has gone down considerably. So a lot of the economic energy that was driving the activities of the gang, they have seen a lot of that recede considerably. The second thing is that certainly there was a period there with regeneration where there was a lot of investment in youth initiatives. And certainly, and it's not just that, but it's also, you know, for instance, things like resource teaching in schools, health services, family child protection services. Now, a lot of those services nationally, everywhere, have been cut very significantly. If we look at Limerick on the ground, juvenile justice services have been cut very significantly. And if you look at, for instance, what Steve Collins was talking about yesterday, he was talking about examples when you had individuals like these who were convicted this week going out into communities and being able to essentially pull up young kids. And
very young kids.
Very young, exactly. Yeah. But all the state has to meet that with is frontline services, which can provide some sort of alternative. And if you cut those, you know, the problem is that you get a very quick turnaround. It's about 5 years and you have a new generation coming up. So while there are, you know, there may be a generation who've benefited from that period, there's another generation coming up. And I don't think we can be complacent about this at all. And if you look at that generation who became very deeply involved in the feud around 2000 in Limerick, you know, you traced, and I did that as part, you traced the roots of that group right back to the 1980s, which we had another period of deep austerity here in Ireland, where the Gardaí and the education services and the child protection services were deeply, they were cut to the bone. And it was that group who emerged in that time and who fell through the cracks and who then became a real threat to the state in the 2000 period. Now, we need to be really complacent about not letting that happen again.
And many of those, actually, I've seen some of the reports in our school who went to Mayrhos, many of those involved in the gangs, red flags were raised with them when they were at 8, 9 and 10. And I suppose our challenge now is the 8, 9 and 10 year olds that we can identify as potentially either fodder for further gangs or valuable members of society.
Right.
We need to address and target those. And we're often left to fundraise special and therapeutic interventions and after schools activities for those kids. And we, when we do that, we are seeing success. We've gone from a situation where...
And I know, Tommy, that you think sport is key. And of course, Limerick is a great city for sport.
Oh, yeah. I think sport is the way forward. People invest into sport. If you have regeneration, getting involved in sport. In Mayrhos, you have a Mayrhos soccer team and they were promoted there to the Premier Division. And they need a lot of help. They need funding. And I'd like to see regeneration funds to go towards that.
Right.
But it actually is not happening, Marion, because they got a set of jerseys or something last year, you know, off of the regeneration. And I think to the joke. And yet they can give €70,000 to fund a tournament in Toomen Park, which I think is very wrong, of our money, regeneration money, which I think is very wrong.
Right.
Why not spread this money over all the regeneration community? Then help the soccer teams, the rugby teams, and, you know, a social regeneration to be better spent, you know?
Okay, well, listen, thank you all very much indeed for coming in, and in particular, Niamh Harrigan, thank you for coming all the way from Cork, which is a long old trek, and I appreciate it very much. And indeed, thank you, Dennis Staunton, for staying with us right throughout. We're moving on to something else now, and I will have to take a break.